Welcome to Choosing Better, conversations about wacky ideas, economics, and the art of living well. We made it.
We made it. What's our destination?
Getting the podcast to start recording.
Oh, that's right.
Both of us are apparently, I see wiggly lines. We're both getting recorded.
It took about an hour and a half to get this set up.
But we did it.
Yeah, we're pre-poured this. Enoch, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you too.
It's always good to see you. I'm excited about this conversation.
Agreed. I am too. Yeah.
Good. So today we're going to talk about just price.
Just prices.
Just prices. That's it. All day. $9.97.
That's it. It's $9.99.
Do you know when I list something on eBay, I oftentimes list it with the last digit 7?
Because it's on clearance?
No, I mean, I just do that. I mean, like when I list something on eBay, I don't know why.
You just want to undercut the person.
I think I just know that the person ahead of me is probably new 99. And just in case they're 98, I do 97.
Got a little room for safety.
Just a little.
If I ever post anything, I'm going to do 9.96.
You should.
They'll buy mine. 46.
I said I should do 47. I said it ends the 7. It might not be a 9.7.
Might be a 47. That's not even strategic anymore.
I know. Now I'm just being chaotic. I know. There's something about it. I also, when I bid for things on eBay, I don't bid in usually a digit that ends at 0. I don't know why either. Just my little particular idiosyncrasies. Just price.
You know what? The crazy thing is you still bid on eBay.
That is,
I think that's the thing we need to point out here.
That might be the thing to point out. I just love 2002. It was a good time.
Right. Craigslist, eBay.
Absolutely. I just love that stuff. So I've got some trivia for you.
Of course you do.
Of course. Okay. Are you ready for this one?
Probably not.
Okay. In 2020, so let's get a little memory machines here. We're talking early to mid 2020 when everyone is really COVID frantic. Two friends were villainized on social media for about a week or so because they, in West Virginia, had driven around to every nearby Dollar Tree, I mean, including out of their state.
I actually think I remember this story.
Okay, what were they hoarding?
Was it hand sanitizer?
It is hand sanitizer. You remember this one, right?
I saw the photo of like a moving truck stuffed with hand sanitizer.
Stuffed with Dollar Tree hand sanitizer. That's right. They're doing price speculation. They're just holding on to it for the market to go up even more.
To maybe sell it at,
I don't think they're moving around.
Unjust price?
That's the question, right?
It is the question.
All right, I have another one for you though.
Okay.
Right now, if you want to do space tourism, what's the cheapest, how much is the cheapest price to get there?
To where?
Outer space. So I looked this up. In 2021, the cheapest ticket to get 30 kilometers from the surface of the Earth.
Short period of time.
No, it's a 6-hour total ride. Total ride, 6 hours. So,
and waitlist for?
I don't know on waitlist. That's a better question.
I mean, it's the length of descent. You can get waitlist without even leaving the.
That's true, but then you can't sell. So you can tell someone I experienced artificial weightlessness.
But did you know it's all artificial? Did you know if you're like,
keep going,
40 miles in the air off the surface of the Earth, you're still at like 9/10 of Earth's surface gravity?
9/10.
You're extremely high. The only reason
9/10.
You know the kind of weightlessness, it's I don't know what it is exactly, but okay. The kind of weightlessness you feel when you're falling in a jet is identical to the kind of weightlessness you feel when you're in orbit, because all of it is because everything in relative to you is falling at the same speed and you're constantly falling towards the center of the Earth, yes, around the Earth. That's all orbit is. It's not weightlessness.
Oh, interesting. So an International Space Station, it's the orbit weightlessness as opposed to actual like lack of gravity. Close to the Earth.
We're all experiencing the gravity of the sun. That matters is the speed that everything around you is moving.
That's true.
All that matters. So if everything around you is moving at the same speed and you're not touching any surface, then.
Do you realize someone is unsubscribed to this, like in real time? Someone unsubscribed to our podcast in real time.
Boring.
These people are stupid.
I already knew that. The person who unsubscribed us was my third grade daughter, who's like, we talked about this already in physics.
All right. So, but you still have the price though. So if someone wants to experience, I guess, all right, sorry.
Artificial weightlessness.
Obviously you would not pay for this because clearly you don't value this at all. I mean,
no. I think artificial weightlessness would be super awesome.
Yeah, but you're saying that you would just rather do it in some kind of jumbo jet that just does a dive.
Well, it's also probably hundreds of thousands of dollars. So
I actually don't know how much that one costs. It's probably cheaper.
All right, $200,000.
$125,000.
Wow, it's bargain prices.
It's a fire
sale.
Or
maybe that's unjust.
It might be too low.
Should anyone spend $125,000?
Well, so here's the next question. How much does it cost estimated to go a full 408 kilometers from the surface of the Earth and spend 12 days in the International Space Station.
That's for sale?
It's being... Thank you. Your reaction is exactly what I was hoping for. Because I saw this in the same article in Forbes, which I feel like is somewhat credible. I don't know.
All right.
So I was in Forbes. I was like, I don't understand who's setting the price. Like, I don't understand who the seller is. It's the International Space Station.
It's like a continent, Tim.
I know, exactly. This seems like snake oil, doesn't it? But there's not tickets yet, but presumably, I think it's maybe perhaps SpaceX is in collaboration going to offer, and they're negotiating right now the price ticket. And I'm not sure who gets the proceeds of this. That's unclear. If it's like equally split with like Russians and Americans, I don't know. But by estimates, how much do you think it might cost if it goes for sale? Very good.
So this is trivia about a hypothetical.
It's a hypothetical.
That it might happen and there's a right answer?
Okay. There's a right answer. It's okay. On Forbes. 2021.
12 days.
12 days.
Everything's included. Or I got to buy on supply. Like,
oh, bring your own peanut butter.
Do you cook my meals for me? Or
I'm assuming it's all inclusive. I didn't read that. Admittedly, I didn't do that much preparation for this question.
Then any mistake I have, I'm going to just...
Yeah.
$2 million.
50 to 60 million. Oh, wow. Range there.
Well, I was within two factors of 10.
Yeah, you're close. You're close.
Astronomically speaking.
That's true. That's true. This is fun.
This is fun.
This is fun. So let's talk about prices.
Okay.
But not in the traditional microeconomics terms of prices, about the price mechanism.
Now, where do prices come from?
Yeah.
Normative.
That's right. What is a just price? Right?
That's the question.
And there's no such thing as an unjust price. Price can be unjust. That's the question, right?
Well, that's the question.
So in your training, Enoch, since you have a PhD in economics,
mm-hmm.
was this question ever raised?
I had never once heard of this until I joined the Association of Christian Economists.
Wow. What up?
And that was post-graduation from my PhD program.
Okay. So by the way, not even the word just, but a normative discussion of prices.
Oh, I mean, in principles of micro.
Okay.
We talked about whether price gouging was a good thing or a bad thing.
Okay. So without you, like raising prices too quickly and too short of a time, for mm-hmm. example,
yeah.
is ethical or unethical.
Yeah. Okay. And I think several people, I think during the 2008 recession, a lot of people were talking about speculation and whether people who are bidding up the price of houses were doing something.
That's right.
Like leveraged speculation was a bad thing.
Yeah. But the idea that in general, it's in day-to-day life that a price could be just or not just.
Yeah. No, I don't think. I mean, I probably talked about it. I was more likely to talk about it outside of my econ classrooms than in my econ classrooms.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating.
Well, In the study of economics, we're incredibly open-minded to, we're trying to figure out why things happen and given your preferences, what they should be. But we're not going to judge your preferences.
Oh, yeah. No judgment, econ.
No.
No judgment.
You want to help the lady across the street, you help her. If you want to steal her groceries and push her over, we'll help you do that. That's basically what economics
That's right.
is all about.
Maximize the utility function, whatever it is.
Whatever your utility function
whatever
is.
Whatever it is. Whatever gives you kicks and giggles. So
the castle or help the world.
To set the stage. We want to talk today about this idea, this concept of prices being just or unjust. In particular, what is the point at which a person is selling something to someone else at an unjust price? And what's the point at which you're selling to someone else for a just price? And this is a question that I think, as you said, Enoch, in modern economics gets oftentimes overlooked, not even discussed.
Well, I don't know if it's overlooked. I mean, I think I have my answer to this question. I think there is a such thing as an unjust price, and I don't think it's bad. I'm going to give you all of my takes within 3 seconds of the beginning of the podcast.
That's amazing.
But I have an answer to the question. I think there is an unjust price. I don't think it's irresponsible of economists not to bring it up. And I think it's not the same dimension that's generally discussed, that I've heard discussed outside of economics or within like Association of Christian Economists circles.
Okay. I think this demands unpacking right off the bat.
You don't want to like talk about your topics or?
I mean,
I know you're prepared.
That's okay. I'm a little agile, I think.
Maybe you're super agile. Yeah,
I think I'm somewhat flexible. Yeah. So first off, let's unpack this idea about I think there actually are unjust prices. So tell me what you mean, then I'll ask you for some examples.
Should we talk about like the history of this conversation at all?
Well, yeah, I think so.
Okay, so start there. So start with the like
Okay.
The mainstream, if you can call it mainstream.
The mainstream. Yeah. So this would be pre-Reformation. So this is a Catholic idea.
Yeah.
Right? Aquinas. Yeah. And is it that is unjust in retail trade, meaning for a merchant, someone who didn't make something, to buy a product and then sell to someone else for more than you paid for? That was the broad idea. It's unjust to...
I've got the primary source quote.
Go for it, please.
Okay. So this is from the Summa. If someone would be greatly helped by something belonging to someone else, and the seller not similarly harmed by losing it, the seller must not sell for a higher price, mm-hmm. because the usefulness that goes to the buyer comes not from the seller, but from the buyer's needy condition. No one ought to sell something that doesn't belong to him. Don't get the last part, but
yeah. Okay. Well, this actually, just set a stage some more here. This is a very interesting time period in economic thought. We've not yet embraced the very notion of self-interest as being perhaps something that's just either assumed and even harnessed. Something up until this point, it's like, no, like you reject self-interest. In this case, the idea is that economics and the economy at large, the buying and selling of goods is done so in a normative way, in which a person says, I'm going to constrain myself intentionally. And maybe I know, for example, say I have, I don't know, I have a wrench at this exact moment. Enoch needs the wrench. I know Enoch needs a wrench. It is unjust for me to take advantage of this need in the moment and sell it to him for a price higher than I paid.
I don't know about the higher than you paid, but I think it's the exorbitant extraction of benefit from my need.
Yes.
That Aquinas is taking issue with. I mean, I think there's allowance for self-interest, maybe not acting out of self-interest, but an identification that different people need things different degrees, which has got to be like an appreciation for at least the uniqueness of our need.
Well, I think there's a difference between someone saying we have a variance in our needs or a difference in our needs, as opposed to saying it's okay that I, through my self-interest, sell you the wrench.
Oh yeah, but I mean, well, I mean, I'm going to appeal to Smith, but I think...
Of course so, but you're centuries from Smith still, right? I'm to that stage in the sense of like, Smith is somewhat revolutionary 50. Compared to where we're now, we're 1270 or so, around there. We're still the medieval ages. And so this is this idea of...
500 years.
Yes, right. We're 500 years from Smith. So we're still quite a ways from Smith about the butcher doing things out of his own self-interest.
Yeah, but I think... So, I mean, okay, yeah. We can talk that way then.
Yeah, it's okay. I just want to bring up this idea because I think in a way, many of us, when it comes to our day-to-day interactions, I think have the law that Aquinas is referring to on our hearts. So it's actually one of my takes. I think that we actually oftentimes do sell things to each other that we know personally at a price we all consider to be just without ever actually having explicit words for it, perhaps. But like, for example, like I think we all know that we don't gouge our friends on prices. We basically, within some reasonable amount, either sells a product to our friend for what we paid for, or for maybe just very, very little more than we paid for.
I agree. I think that is like, we just have this sentiment of fairness.
Exactly.
It feels unfair.
Yes. And so here's the question. I think that like most people I know, if you said, hey, can you believe it? My cousin completely took advantage of me. He charged me three times what he paid for, I don't know, this TV, because he knew I wanted it. We go, I know, let's imagine the buyer. So let's imagine it's me. I bought it for my cousin, but I learned after the fact I paid three times what he paid for it. I would probably after the fact go, that's unfair, right? He took advantage of me. But yet, this is my take. You tell me I'm right or wrong here. I think broadly in society, if I share this with you, Enoch, and said, can you believe my cousin sold to me a TV three times more than he paid? You'd be like, oh my gosh, that's so much.
Yeah, like get my baseball bat and we go.
No, yeah, exactly. Thank you. You're a true friend.
That's your help. I got your back.
Thank you. Thank
Even
you.
If it's irrational.
Absolutely. Thank you. But if I told you instead, like, can you believe it? My cousin bought something on Craigslist in 2002 and he sold it on Facebook Marketplace for three times the price. You might go, wow, that's really cool. Good for your cousin.
Yeah. How shrewd.
How shrewd. Exactly. So when it's interpersonal or downright kinship, we feel a sense of like unfairness. But if it's a stranger, you don't.
We heard, yeah, that's interesting. We both listened to the same podcast.
Yeah.
So we can talk about it. So this is Econ Talk. But there was a podcast about, what, the Highlands? It's being a shepherd, at least.
Yeah.
And it was about if you bought a sheep No, it's about not taking advantage of asymmetric knowledge. So if you knew that there was a higher price for sheep in a neighboring town, and you had the ability to buy the sheep for much less than you were able to sell it.
In your town?
In any neighboring towns or whatever, from a quick sale, you would never take advantage of that.
That's right.
And if you did...
Because of the kinship effects.
It might be kinship. It might not even be any relation, but you would...
Well, yeah, sorry, should rephrase. That's right. But for the local effects of the relational effects, because you care about your reputation.
That's right. You care about your reputation and you just would be a worse human being if you did that. Like it was just it seemed to be understood societally that you wouldn't fleece someone.
Oh, thank you. That was very intentional. You're very proud of yourself on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. So we basically laid out already this idea of a just price. And in fact, through these examples that we all kind of have this law written in our hearts. Like I think we do. So for example, if I have a bike that one of my kids' bikes they grew out of, and I say, oh, I think I'm gonna sell my kid's bike. If a friend says, oh, I'll buy it from you, what almost always happens, I go, oh, well, you know, I was gonna sell it for 50, but I just have it. Or take it for 10, right? Or for the friend, you give the friend discount, right? Which is sometimes why, dare I say, some people don't want to tell their friends they're selling something because they don't want to give the friend discount.
Well, it's an odd thing because if your friend, you wouldn't just see your friend and be like, here's 40 bucks. For no reason whatsoever.
Okay. First off, for the listener, walk me through how your mind jumped there.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know what you just did, but for a life of them, I'm like, what the heck? This has nothing to do with what you just said.
All right. So suppose that there was a clear market for this bike and you could sell it without a shadow of a doubt for $50, but you bought it for 10. And if you sold it to a friend, you would sell it to them for 10.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So essentially, and it would cost you nothing to sell it for 50. It's like the easy, you put it on Facebook Marketplace and minutes later it's already
porch pickup.
You just gotta set it outside ever. It's even easier because you're gonna deliver it to your friend because you're a gentleman.
They take it off your porch. That's what you're doing with your friend.
Yeah. So it is easier to sell it on Facebook Marketplace. So basically what you are doing, it's you're doing it through the medium of the bike. You're giving them a $40 discount and they probably don't even value, like they probably wouldn't even buy the bike at $50. They probably would buy it at up to 25. Like they value it, but not as much as the random stranger who actually needs it real bad, because what would their daughter do without this used bike that's beautiful and just the one that she wants? So essentially you're foregoing $50, giving it to your friend for 10, driving it over to their house. So you essentially gave them $40 out of your pocket.
Yeah.
But
in the unrealized value of the bike.
But if like 5 minutes ago you sold the bike for 50 and then they came over and were like, oh, I was looking for a bike. You'd be like, oh, that's so sorry. I hadn't just sold it. But you wouldn't reach into your pocket and be like, here's the 40 bucks that you would have gained from me not selling it.
That's amazing. You're completely correct. I think probably if there's a human, if I heard the story that someone did that and they say, guess who the person was? I go, it's probably Enoch. I feel like Enoch's friend first and said, rats.
Darn, you caught me. Here's 40 bucks.
I should have sold it to my friend at a $10 price. So there's a $40 surplus value. Yeah. Well, you're totally right. We don't do that. Although, do you think maybe being hyper-rationalist by even using that with that example?
I think that kind of thing happens all the time. Like we rent out our basement. Mm-hmm. When family or friends are in town, we let them stay for free.
Yeah.
But like we can rent it almost as often as we want. So anytime a friend comes to town and stays with us, it costs us, you know, $80 to $100 a night. Or it's money that we could have earned. And I've had that thought pass my mind, but I don't want to think that way. Like, I want to just be like, so glad you're here. And I enjoy them staying at our house.
Yeah. And if the person left you like a gift card to say thank you for say $20 per night, in your head, you're not thinking to yourself like, nah, $60 short. If you do.
I have had that thought. Yeah. But I'm like, that was very nice of them to get us a gift card.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So, but still though, even though you've rationalized all this out, Enoch, I'm your friend. And so if you were selling the bike, would you sell to me at the friend discount?
Yeah, I think so.
I think you would, right?
Yeah. We had this conversation.
We might both laugh though.
Yeah.
About the whole idea of like, well, here's a random transfer.
Yeah.
Well, not, here's a transfer.
Here's 40 bucks, Tim.
Yeah, here's 40 bucks.
You asked me at the right time.
And I'd probably laugh and go, I guess I'll eat lunch. Right. And I'm like, this is funny.
Yeah.
But you still probably would.
Yeah.
So why is that? Is it because of fear of reputational costs of like not being known and finding out that you gouged your friend? Or is it because like you just want to be a good person to your friend? Because I don't necessarily know what you paid for the bike. Right? I don't know. Only you know you paid for the bike. So especially, I want to make that very clear too. Let's imagine the price of the bike that you paid for on the secondary market. You bought a bike for $10, but you know you got a fantastic deal. Say you bought it, for example, in like rural Indiana, and you know in the suburbs of Wheaton, you could sell it on Facebook Marketplace for $50. I don't know what you pay for the bike. I just tell you that, hey, my daughter needs a bike. And you go, I have one. I'll sell it to you for 10. That's such private information. Would you still sell it to me for 10?
I think the good person argument falls flat if you think broadly enough. It can't be that. That can't be the reason. Because here's why. Because somebody who's willing to pay 50 needs the bike more than, if you probably wouldn't have paid 50 for the bike that I had. Like you might've paid 30 or 40, but assume that there's somebody on Facebook Marketplace who wants the bike more, who would benefit more from the bike. I could take a better action by being like, oh, this person on Facebook Marketplace needs it more than you do. So I'm going to sell it to them for 10 and do the random transfer to them. But then, you know, everybody's better off. Or even if I didn't want to do that, I could say like, I like you more than this random person on Facebook Marketplace who's willing to buy it for 50. I'm going to sell it for 50. And I'm going to give you $30, which is better for you than getting the bike for 10. And I'm going to pocket 10. And everybody's better off than if I would have just sold it to you for 10.
But you would never actually do that.
No, I would never do that.
You'd never do that.
So it can't, but it cannot be because like, I'm actually just a really good person. Or my guess is that it's critically important to belong to a group. That is like critically important for survival. My guess is that this is a mechanism that makes us feel closer to each other, and that there might not be good substitutes for doing things like that all of the time.
Okay. So let me ask this question. Maybe this is a confession. So a couple of years ago, my kids were really into Pokemon cards. Actually, maybe only a year ago. Ooh, time flies. And I was, around Christmas time, going to buy them some Pokemon cards. And there's a website called Pokemon Center, maybe. Actually, it's the official seller of Pokemon cards online. And I noticed on that website that particular Pokemon cards that were being sold for like significantly cheaper than on eBay. I was like, oh, this is a no-brainer. I'll just list it on eBay. And if anyone buys it, I'll just ship directly to them and make like, I don't know, $8 per transaction. And then of course, with the eBay fees, it turned out like, I think I was only netting like $4 whatever per transaction. I did it once and I was like, that wasn't worth it. That was lame.
Did anything problematic happen from it?
No, nothing problematic happened at all. But should I have done that though? Like effectively, I never even touched the product, right? So like when someone, like I think I sold one unit before I stopped doing it. And when someone in some state ordered it, and then I just went, great. And then I just went to Pokemon Center or whatever, put the order in, and then did the free shipping directly to that person. So like, I never actually touched the product.
All right. So I want to say that our intuition.
Yeah.
I trust intuition a lot.
Yeah.
So like, I think that there probably is something wrong about it. Like that it's good you stopped.
Yeah, I think so too. But no one's going to, I think you're one of the few people that would actually maybe like championing like me stopping. I think most of like, why did you stop? Like,
Well, rationally, I can't, my rational intuition is that you're actually hurting more people by not doing it because you're creating an efficiency. You're by continuously buying these cards from the low price place, mm-hmm. you're upping the average price. Like as you can, if you did this in mass, if you started doing it at the level of hundreds yeah. of these cards, you'd probably start upping the price of these cards. Like all of the ones that were being sold cheaply would be run out. They start going up in price. So the people who are selling on that channel would benefit. And as you flooded the eBay market with these,
the price would go down.
The price on the eBay market would go down. And so,
and they should equalize.
And they would move towards equality. So you'd be moving the people who really wanted the cards to pay less. You'd be moving the people who really wanted to sell the cards to receive more. So everybody would have been better off, as far as I can understand.
Yeah.
If you would have taken your actions. Like arbitrage through almost any economic model always works to the benefit of everybody.
Yeah, but at least for me, like I remember like when I actually processed it. So in my head, I was like, this is a great idea. My sales price difference, oh, let's do this. And then when someone hit, you know, so to speak, on it.
You felt guilty.
I did. Actually, when I filled the order, I went to Pokemon Center and I put in a person's name that I saw on my seller account on eBay. And then I put in their address. I was like, I don't know, like they're paying too much.
Yeah. You felt wrong.
Yes, I did.
And I would have felt run too, and I would have stopped too.
Yeah.
But I
yeah.
can't understand. But I, so like, and I trust my intuition.
That's right.
So I'm not saying there's nothing wrong there. I'm saying there probably is, but I, but all of my like economic training can't tell me why.
But do you think Aquinas can tell you why?
Yeah. Well, he has an answer.
Yeah.
But if everybody followed his answer, there'd be a lot of things that were worse. Like
there would be.
So like
right?
the gross. So people don't really like middle people.
Can't stand them.
But like, what is a grocery store? Like they do not, the bread you buy directly from the supplier is less expensive than the grocer's price. But like, if I had to go to the baker and to the chicken farm and then to the dairy farm, and I had to go to like 10 different places, I would have wasted my whole day to just get my grocery shopping done. And thank goodness the grocery store knows that they can buy it cheaper from all these places and then bring it to a centralized place and anticipate what I want. And then when I go there, I get everything I want in one place. Well, now like a couple, because Aldi's has great prices, but doesn't have everything we want. And my life significantly improved. So like, I think somebody figuring out the prices are different in different places does a great service. Like, let's go to the extreme price gouging example.
Let's do it. Actually, because we're both begging for it. Yeah.
We both wanted to since the beginning.
We did. Okay. Let's just bring it up. Okay. So Hurricane Katrina. Mm-hmm. It's like the classic example, at least in the United States. Hurricane Katrina happens and there's an absolute devastation. Obviously, New Orleans is not prepared for one little bit in 2005. And there's many, many people who take advantage of the situation. I'm going to use the word very intentionally, because I think as a self-interested way, most people coming down to sell flashlights, which is a classic example, aren't doing so out of benevolence. They're doing so because there's
greedy jerks.
Let's call them that. That's right. They're greedy jerks. Or there's just an opportunity. Now, admittedly, what's really funny is I think the people who are by and large doing this are actually in our socioeconomic group typically.
Yeah, maybe they needed it.
Yeah, exactly. Because I do feel it's very strong. The kind of person who's the villain here is usually not my neighbor. Because my neighbor is like, I'm not going to go to Dollar Trees all around my area, buy up 1,000 flashlights, and then drive all in New Orleans to sell them for $10 a pop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not worth my time. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, it is. Okay, so let's imagine someone goes around and buys 1,000 flashlights for $1 each and then drives down New Orleans and sells them out of their trunk to people who are desperate.
And have just lost everything.
Just lost everything for $10 per flashlight. Mm-hmm. Knowing full well that, quite frankly, because they're dollar store branded flashlights, there's a really high likelihood that the person who's buying the flashlight is doing so voluntarily while cussing at the person who's selling them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, screw you, right? Mm-hmm. As they buy it from the person's trunk. Let's just cut right to the end here. Your econ training tells you that's a good thing.
So here's the two arguments. There's two dimensions on which this is an improvement over restricting it.
Yep.
So number one, if you prevent this activity from occurring, let's say what the objective is. If you were the dictator of the universe and you could tell anybody to do anything anytime you wanted, and you were benevolent, you wanted to help as many people as possible, you would want to get the people who were doing the least amount of good where they were to do the work to collect the most amount of the resources that were needed for New Orleans and to truck it on down to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Like, that is an awesome outcome. So I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that. You don't want to do an arbitrary wealth transfer away from these people who are just had their whole lives destroyed.
Yeah.
So that's tragic. But you want to somehow mobilize people to get water, wood, flashlights, whatever is necessary down to New Orleans as fast as possible.
Yeah.
So they're mission one accomplished. If you keep prices at the pre-crisis level, so if you require the flashlights to be sold for a dollar, you don't mobilize any of these people. You can only mobilize people who are willing to do it out of the goodness of their heart or through aid programs, which are going to be pretty expensive to run.
Yeah.
And so you're doing other arbitrary wealth transfer in other dimensions, but you're getting less efficient groups to do it. Second, what is the mechanism to allow flashlight prices to come down? Well, if enough people feel like it's socially acceptable to drive the flashlights down to Orleans and sell them at a huge profit, that profit will not last for very long because a ton of people will do it. Like right now, there is so much social cost. Only people who already like don't have much self-regard or are willing to buck trends are going to be the people driving it down. But if we could, like, that's tragic. Maybe if everyone felt like it was totally fine to price gouge their neighbor, we'd actually get a solution much, much faster. Like water supplies would be driven down, and it frees up other people to do it out of good reasons. Like maybe I want to help people, but I just need to cover my gas costs and I need to make sure my family's provided for. So like I sell the flashlights for $2 or water or whatever it is I'm selling instead of for $10. And all that difference is just to cover the cost of gas from moving it from where I was to New Orleans.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple important things to hit here is that number one, actually the speed is very, very quick here. Because if you're the kind of person who wants to sell it for a high price, you know full well as the supply shifts and moves, that high profit margin is going to disappear real fast. So therefore, if you actually want to make that high profit margin, you move quickly, mm-hmm. right? Which actually, I think is the beautiful component of all this. You get the most rapid transfer resources imaginable because of profit potential. Because if you wait 2 weeks or 3 weeks, well, the flashlights are no longer profitable. So you have to get them out, you have to sell them immediately. And quite frankly, the people buying the flashlights are taking risk. They really are. Because you're buying a bunch of flashlights.
Yeah, by the time they might get there.
Yeah, exactly. By the time I get there, it might be all the market for flashlights might disappear to only $1.50 per flashlight, which might not cover your gasoline or your time. So there's risk being taken here. I acknowledge all that. But would you move the flashlights yourself? Like being who you are, Enoch.
No, I feel terrible doing it.
Yeah, I don't think you'd do it. I don't think I would either. And we both know these whole ideas of arbitrage, which is like, you know, the reselling of a product or moving something around different markets to sell for different prices. We both know these things, right? And I agree with you too. I would never want the government to restrict the transfer because I think the world would be worse off.
Mm-hmm.
But simultaneously, I would never touch that.
But if I was in New Orleans and I was struggling and I needed water and
you would want someone to do it.
I would pray that there'd be price gougers coming because all they're going to do, either I will buy it or I won't. But if I don't buy it, I know that they're increasing the number of flashlights in my community.
That's right.
And as that happens, it's more likely that eventually the price will come low enough that I can get one.
And if you're willing to pay, say you're in New Orleans and you're willing to pay through time, you could wait for the price to come back down, right?
Obviously. Well, and that's the other thing is like the fundamental reason why the price goes high is because there's a lot of people who need the good and there's not much available. So let's go to water, which is a little more high stakes. But the price of like bottled water skyrocketed after Katrina as well. And imagine that there's like three different people and they all quote unquote need water, but one is just like very concerned about the possibility that their family will run out of water. So they're willing to pay double the price. And then you have another person who's like literally on the brink of like dying from dehydration. That person is willing to pay $100 a bottle of water. And the fundamental reality is that there's not enough water for everyone to get some. You want the person who's going to die to get the water. And it's really hard to ask, you know, suppose there's an aid worker that comes down and is like, who needs water? Everybody's going to say, I desperately need that water. And there's not a good way to differentiate between the person who's dying of thirst and the person who is like trying to stockpile. And they're both not trying to lie. They're both just, you know, they don't know how bad everybody else needs it by allowing the price to go to its equilibrium level. So letting it fly all the way up to $80 a bottle at first. You're making sure the people who are like the people who get the very scarce amount of water that it is available, that it's going to the people who desperately need it. The problem I have with my own story is the people who desperately need it and have $80. But
yeah, that's right. Because the inequality of the income, the inequality of like how much money someone has at any given moment. So, okay, let's actually cut even to more local. So you said that people want to belong to a group when you're part of a group. So that's a lot of the reason why you adjust price within your own group. So obviously our example here is actually cross groups. So
yeah,
you have people from Oklahoma.
We've changed the example.
You know, moving down to New Orleans. I have two more questions for you. So let's imagine we're in our own local group. We'll call it your church. Okay. In which there's more of an expectation of maybe even having a conversation with someone in your church. Let's say it's you and I, okay? Would you rebuke me if I was price gouging? So if
people
you found,
in the church?
In this, no, me in particular. I mean, just me. Tim
price
Taylor,
gouging, like people
you found out that I was, that you found that you found that I told, you found out that I bought up a whole bunch of bottled water and I drove it down to a different city after a hurricane. And I was selling the water for 1,000% profit per bottle. And I came back and I said, man, that was great. I can finally afford to take my kids to Disney World. And I told you how I did it.
take him 6 kilometers off the surface of the earth.
Oh, even better. Okay. How would you respond to that though? Like, would you tell me because we're in the same in-group very much so in lots of ways. We have lots of intersections, and a lot of those are on like strong moral intersections and faith intersections. Would you rebuke me? Gently, I think. I don't think you'd be that mean to me.
It depends. If I just came out of an econ class, I'd be like, man, more people need to do that. But if I just came out of, if I wasn't thinking economically, I would be like, my gut reaction would be like, man, Tim is a scumbag.
Yeah, I think you would, right?
I would. I mean,
you might be the only people who actually are like, well, but most people, I think, honestly, I'd be ashamed to even share my story.
And it's tragic because if everyone had that, didn't have that, like it, I don't think it's the government primarily. I think it's cultural norms that prevent people from price gouging. And I think if everyone would have quickly driven down the stuff to New Orleans, it would have fixed the problem. I think the example you started with, though, is a different one, the hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
Like they are artificially restricting supply.
That's right, because they took it off the market. They're not moving around. They took it off the market and put it in storage to speculate. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. Although maybe
they're temporally waiting. They're moving it through time.
But that, okay. So the only way that pays for them, well, I mean, this one's a lot harder for me.
Well, it's also a foolish investment because you and I both know like, oh guys, this price is going to go down real fast because it did. Like, I mean, you and I know enough about all these situations to be like, they're going to make more hand sanitizer. I mean, we saw this with COVID, a distillery stopped making booze and started making hand sanitizer, which is wild, right?
Yeah.
You could buy like distilled hand sanitizer. So, I mean, that was also foolish, but let's imagine it wasn't that foolish. Who cares the foolishness of the investment? They were doing something different. They were holding it to wait for profit margins across time.
So what that is doing is it's almost, so geographical movement is somewhat akin to intertemporal movement. Like, suppose it was gasoline and you're speculating on it.
Yeah.
By driving the price up now, because of your speculation, you're creating more availability at a time period where you believe there's more acute scarcity. So like, if you really think that there's going to be less available oil relative to the people who want that oil a year from now, and you drive up the prices right now, you're actually causing us to be like, any person who followed Aquinas would be like, the right thing to do right now is to be prudent and to like lower our appetite for oil right now so that when we really need it, we'll have it a year from now. And maybe oil is a bad example, but like, it's like collective temperance enforcement, but the temperance doesn't come through like inner virtue. It comes through like not wanting to spend a whole bunch of money on oil.
Yeah.
But it causes everyone to reduce their consumption of oil at a time where we have relatively more of it compared to, if the speculator is right, sometime in the future where it will be more scarce. I think oil is a bad example because most people aren't going to feel like sad and moved by oil. We need to think about something else. Like the last remaining doses of insulin.
Oh,
So insulin is not a good example either. I need something that like everybody would agree with, that we should move it forward in time. But I don't know what that is.
Well, the just price. Okay, so okay, I have two favorite questions. I want to move on to buying, but also into usury, because actually they're related. I'll do buying first. So, because the just price is not only selling, although we really seem to morally care. This intuition seems to be much stronger for a seller than for a buyer. It really does.
Yeah, it does, except for like coffee, right? Like coffee, I mean, coffee producers are classically,
that's right,
not connected to, there's at least
the local harvesters.
Local producers often don't know like global prices.
Yeah. And you're right, when it comes to food consumption in general too, farming and everything else, like there's a strong thing like, are you buying ethically sourced food?
So buyers are able to often price gouge in the opposite direction by underpaying for the product.
Yeah.
And then selling it.
I guess we should rename this episode Confessions. So here's another confession for you. When I was in grad school, I started grad school with one child, and I had two more children by the time I finished my PhD. So I had three kids. At the end of my time in PhD, I always look forward to spring, because in spring, the undergrad, because I'm sure you probably also stayed 12 months in your grad school, you didn't move around in the summertime,
right?
But undergrads, are oftentimes moving out. So where I was, the university I was at in the spring, on Facebook, undergrads would begin to sell their meal swipes because they're going to be gone. Yeah. Right? So there's a very clear termination point. We'll call it June 1st. On June 1st, all meal swipes expire. So undergrads would post on Facebook, I'm selling meal swipes. These meal swipes are probably valued at, I can't remember the price was, I'll say $10 per swipe.
Sure.
At the cafeteria. But I would show up with my family, all five of us, and there would be an open market. I loved it, by the way. It was so much fun. It was just delightful. There'd be open market, people yelling. So someone be standing there and go, you know, I got 10 swipes, $3, $3, 10 swipes. And so, you know, they're charging, you know, $3 per set of 10 available total. And I would yell out, it felt like you were in the pit itself.
Yeah,
it was amazing. And I would yell out like, I got five people, you know, $3, $2. And then you find the buyer and seller match up and they go in and the seller, I'll give cash outside and the seller just swipe. Like they swipe, they do all the swipes you want, boom, you're good to go. I was taking advantage of a product that was going to disappear in value very quickly. And so as the buyer, I'm paying much less than the retail value of the swipe because this person didn't use our swipes at some point previously in time.
Yeah, that's a great example. So a couple of thoughts. Yeah. The first one is the seller is either not going to sell to you and not get anything for their swipes, or they're going to sell to you and they're going to get $3. So from their perspective, they are strictly benefited from you underbuying.
100%. Actually, as a matter of fact, this one, there was really the only entity that existed that seemed to really hate this
is the producer of the food, right?
That's right. The vendor. The vendor hated this because I think the vendor, when they bid for the university, they bid in the university expecting some deterring rate of how many swipes should be used. They probably, if they're doing the bid, they probably,
sure, they forecast.
We think 80% of those swipes will be used. I'm disrupting their prediction because now I'm buying some portion of that 20% of unused swipes.
But as long as this happens across the university campuses of America, this is already baked into the calculations, right? And so who's really paying for it is this, ironically, the students themselves on the front end. Like they are buying swipes that, like the average price of college campus meals would be slightly lower.
That's right.
If all the swipes didn't get used at the end of each year because of the general equilibrium effect, which is like over time, these people who bid on being able to provide the meal services for a campus.
That's right. If students in theory could not sell their, if they're biometrically like a link to a student, mm-hmm. they could not sell their swipes, then they could actually with fairly high precision go 20% of the swipes will be unused. But because they can sell them, maybe not only 10% are unused, because mm-hmm. half that unused swipes are actually being sold on a secondary market. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And quite frankly, you could tell the students who were selling their swipes either did it for fun and for pleasure because they enjoyed the actual market, or they did it because they weren't high-end students. I'm sure if you're like a fairly wealthy student or whose, you know, parents paying for everything, you might go, whatever.
Not worth your time.
Not worth my time. Exactly. I'm not going to go on Facebook and arrange to meet someone at 5 p.m. to sell $8 for the swipes. I don't really care a whole lot. But still though, I mean, I know you just said how it's a much more efficient outcome. It is, right? Just like the bike example, it's a more efficient outcome as far as the seller being able to sell it to me. But I am paying knowingly less than retail price. I am paying less than the student.
Oh no, I think you're taking advantage of those students.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, if collectively nobody did that there, I actually think it might be an inefficiency.
So yeah, I am paying, let's say the retail price is $10. I am paying $7, to make that number up, less than retail price per swipe. And by the way, in my lifetime, I probably bought, I don't know, 40 swipes total for my family, you know, across those multiple years. Until by the way, the centralized power put a kibosh on it. They killed the market. So they said, you're no longer allowed to swipe in a guest. So that basically destroyed it.
Yep.
By the way, on a side note, I've always been surprised that no market like this has ever emerged at Wheaton College. Students have never sold swipes here that I know of. Anyway. Side note, fascinating.
I mean, I think it might be linked to like the strength of our gut morality.
Exactly. People are like, I mean, they'd rather just swipe in for free. I think instead of selling it, they go, you know, I'm going to lose it anyway. It's free.
Yeah.
Like, they don't want to sell it. So on the just price, would you put this way, do you have a moral problem? If you were doing it, would you buy swipes at a discount rate?
I think I would.
You think you would? Okay. Because it does feel a little different, doesn't it? Being a buyer feels a little bit different than being a seller. I think
clear that all the people in the transaction are benefited.
That's right.
Like the outside option is the seller loses out on any value from those meals.
Okay. Okay. All right. I just want to put it out there for the buying also fits as an example. All right. I want to shift into usury. So interest rates. Because I think these are actually kind of linked. Because the argument you just used about shifting, about prices, about someone being in the market, being better than they weren't in the market, can oftentimes be used for interest rates. So usually an economist is less opposed to having a governmental rule on a max cap of interest rates for loans. You're like, well, you know, like someone who's a non-qualified borrower should be able to get, you know, like should can only get a loan if they have a high interest rate. I mean, for example, I worked with a group a couple of years ago, the group I was working for, this institute, they were advocating for a national federal ban that would cap, or I guess a cap, of 32% interest on short-term loans. And I, by the way, and I really don't like predatory lending. I can't stand it. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I don't support you on that one. Like, what? I thought you don't like predatory lending. I was like, well, would you loan $1,000 to this type of person for only 32%? Like, well, no, of course not. I'm like, exactly. Of course you wouldn't. Like, why would you? Because the default risk is too high. You wouldn't do it. You'd have to express that risk to more people, et cetera, et cetera. But I simultaneously, Enoch, I'll just tell you this straight up. I do not want to close a payday loan store, for example. I do not want to close them through the government. Simultaneously, I think if someone in my church owned a payday loan store and they, I don't know, went up for elder, I think I would be like, I don't think you're qualified.
Yeah.
Right? And how do you reconcile those two things?
Well, I think motive matters a lot here. And maybe that's the same intuition we have. Like in all these cases, I think there's ways I think it's the social condemnation that prevents the benefits from happening. So that's the problematic part. But individually, I would hope that like, if you knew that there's a need for flashlights in New Orleans, that you just drive down there and maybe make enough to cover your costs or your time, but you wouldn't try to extract the wealth from the people. I think maybe that's what Aquinas was talking about. Like
I think so too. I think he's okay with you building into the price.
He even writes that. That's he right. says like you can provide for your family.
Exactly. So yeah. So you saying it's going to cost me $800 in gas. That's a big number. Okay. It's going to cost you.
I'm driving a tank.
Exactly. It's going to cost a lot of gas. And maybe you're like, I'm going to forfeit wages at my hourly job for 2 days. And so therefore I know it's going to be $125, whatever. Yep. I'm building that all into my price. Yeah. I think that's actually okay. But that's not why people are moving the product, generally speaking.
No. And frankly, like it is the motive of the profit that gets the people to mobilize.
Yeah.
But like I worked for a microloan organization, and the interest rates on those, like those microloans are we were in Guatemala, but we did loans of $50 to $500 to people who lived in and around the garbage dump and who had very, very small businesses. Like we're talking loans that would allow people to have a restaurant with two chairs to double their capacity to four chairs. And these are plastic chairs that are remarkably inexpensive. But when you're living hand to mouth, you just can't afford like any sort of investment. And so like it could double someone's income. Now, it's an incredibly expensive task because you have all these people who have to be involved in teaching people to run a business and continuously going and making collections. And we gave classes on how to run businesses effectively and things like that. So it was very similar to this example of we gave with New Orleans. Like the organization was not trying to make a profit. In fact, it was still raising support to cover its costs outside of the interest from the loans. But it charged much higher than 32% per year, much, much higher than 32% per year. But it was always working to get people off of the loans as fast as possible. Hmm. And like the intent of the organization was to get people financially independent. And it was very clear that was the intent. And that was like constantly discussed. And that was like everybody who worked for it was working for it because they believed in helping people like escape poverty, not because they wanted to keep people in poverty. And I think that might be the difference. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. I think it's a very good story about the intent. I mean, I can juxtapose that to a nastier story where I knew someone who would they were a small time landlord. You know, I did not have a lot of properties, but the preferred way of flipping a property was not your traditional flip most people do, you know, buying a house and selling it to a buyer on a conventional mortgage. The preferred way of doing it is finding an underqualified borrower who could not typically access to credit through a normal bank, and they sell the person on a land contract, meaning that they act as the bank themselves. And the person usually have to do like, you know, say $5,000 down the house, but they're hoping actually that the house would, that the buyer would go default and therefore get the house back and sell to somebody else. And so that's another contrary example of this person's intent was I actually want people to default because I make more money. Therefore on the same house, I can sell to three or four different people in a 10-year period and make even more money. And I think that kind of person, to kind of double down on what you're saying, Enoch, if they're in my group, I'd probably feel a fairly strong moral pull to go talk to and say, hey, I don't know if you're doing the right thing here.
I think that's right. I think that's right. And I think we're getting close to where I do think there's a thing as an unjust price.
Okay. Actually, since you led with that, let's go there now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in Leviticus 25, it's the passage with the year of Jubilee. And I think most people aren't very familiar with the specifications of the policy proposal. But basically, it says that every 50th year, all of the land is returned to its original owners. And there is there is debt forgiveness in Leviticus, but it is not specified in the year of Jubilee. In the year of Jubilee, everyone's land goes back to them, but then there's a naming of an unjust price. So it says, if you sell your land before the year of Jubilee, this is in Leviticus 25, starting in verse 14, and if you make a sale to your neighbor or buy from your neighbor, you shall not wrong one another. You shall pay your neighbor according to the number of years after the Jubilee, and he shall sell to you according to the number of years for crops. If the years are many, you shall increase the price, and if the years are few, you shall reduce the price, for it is the number of the crops that he is selling to you. You shall not wrong one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. So this is very clear reference to just price, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And the price has to do with making sure that there is a clear understanding of what is being bought and sold. You're not buying the land, you're buying the number of crops that remain until land is returned. So it's not like forgiving the debts that you had to sell your land at one point in time, unfortunately, it's that there's 3 years that remain. So you shouldn't gouge the person buying the land from you and charge them as if the land was going to be held in perpetuity, knowing full well that in 3 years that land was going to come back to you. And so where I think unjust price comes in is when there's asymmetric information or when one of the parties doesn't know what is being bought or sold very clearly. And I think that might relate to this example of buyers taking advantage of small-time farmers who don't know the global prices, because there's it would be relatively easy for them to take advantage of the higher price if they had that knowledge.
Yeah.
Which is...
So your issue is more about information not being shared equally as opposed to moving something across space and price gouging.
Mm-hmm.
Your bigger problem is... So you have a bigger problem. So everyone gets more heated about the example flashlights from, moving from Oklahoma to New Orleans. And getting very upset about that. But that one is full information. Like the person behind the flashlight knows, I saw that at the dollar store 2 months ago. I know it costs a dollar, but doggone, I'm paying 10. Your bigger problem is the seller, they happen to know that this product is available one block over to the east for a dollar. And they know the buyer doesn't know that. And so they're selling it to the buyer for $3 because of this information gap.
Yeah. And I think that might go to your example of the Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
There, it might be the right thing to do to be like, hey, I'm going to make a $4 profit on this if you buy it from me. Mm-hmm. But anybody who wants to can go to this other website and buy it directly from them.
Yeah.
Here's the link.
Which, by the way, takes the exact amount of clicking. The clicking is the same number of clicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So it's not like I'm here to serve.
And so just put it in your ad. And anybody who wants to can go over there. And if anybody doesn't, then they clearly value their time more than your time of taking the extra step of clicking the link.
Yeah. Or creating an account. This other store.
And if all information is clearly understood and they're like, I just don't want to walk across the street or down the block or click the link, then I think you can sell it to them for whatever price you want. Same thing with goods and services. So if you're selling them a watch that, and both parties know it's a fake Rolex, then I think both parties can pay whatever price they want. But if you're the seller and you know that it's a fake Rolex and the buyer thinks that it's real, or vice versa, if you're the seller and you think that it's a real fake Rolex and the buyer knows that it's real, that information needs to be reconciled. I think that unjust price could occur there.
Yeah.
But when both parties with full knowledge of the transaction occurring, both agree to exchange, I don't know if I believe that there's such thing as an unjust price.
Yeah. Which of course, this comes up all the time in the used car market, right? All the time, someone's like, there's a massive information problem.
Yeah.
Right? And which is actually really funny. On a side note, the only time I've ever tried to sell something on a platform that I got yelled at by potential buyers, and I ain't bad buyers, this used the platform, was when I fully disclosed how bad the car was. So I bought a lemon of a car and then I didn't realize how bad it was. So I bought it and my mechanic was like, ooh, you should have bought this van. This van is terrible. So a few months later, I tried to offload it and I sold it for about probably about 60% less than I paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a full disclosure in the ad of all the problems. And I had people actually text me and be like, I can't believe you're trying to sell this thing. You should get this off the market. Don't pass your problems on someone else. And I thought it was interesting because I was actually getting full disclosure. Of course, someone did buy it. It was all good. I have no problem with what I did morally. But I want to end with this though, because we've been talking for a while about just price. I think most people would agree, yes, disclosure is good. Right? I think most people would agree, disclosure is good. And in a world in which you did full disclosure, I think the world is still a pretty good place. Like, I don't think we're really missing a whole lot with information asymmetries and someone taking advantage of somebody else. But I do want to end with this, I think, important question that I think you and I both probably share this. On the one hand, I want my world to exist in which arbitrage or reselling something can exist, even though there's full information being shared. I want that world to exist. I want the water to be moved from place to place. I want the faucet to move place to place, but I don't want to do it.
And you wouldn't want your kids to be the ones to do it.
I don't want my kids to do it. No, as a matter of fact, if I found out my kids are doing it, I think I would rebuke them. But you know, as in a loving way, as a parent is supposed to, as a parent is supposed to form their children in good ways and seek virtue and avoid vice.
And here's the angle you'd say. You'd say, I want you to move the water to New Orleans, but I want you to do it out of the goodness of your heart or just recoup your bare costs. But if you did that, then the next time, I mean, they might do it because they were castigated by you.
That's right.
But the next time they'd be like, oh, it's so sad. All these people don't have enough water. And then they probably wouldn't do anything.
That's right.
Whereas in the other example, they would have done the very thing that was most needed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think when you move the self-interest and let someone actually benefit from the moving of the product, more products move and the world is a better, as you said, the world is a better place. Like probably the most efficient way to actually allocate and move those resources is to let people price gouge. But I don't want anyone that I'm responsible for morally to be doing it. And I find that to be
paradoxical.
It is.
Yeah.
And I'm troubled by it, Enoch. But yet simultaneously, if I was teaching a lecture,
because you're a hypocrite.
I get, well, in a class, I'm sorry, now, even in a college classroom, if a student said, well, I'm opposed to price gouging during times of national disaster, I would 100% give an argument about why it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And then probably the conversation would end there. But the student was more shrewd to go, well, would you do it? I say, well, of course not.
Yeah.
I would say, of course not. Yeah. And they go, well, how do you hold those two things together? I would just say, I do. I hold them together. In other words, I do feel like I'm outsourcing my moral difficulties and challenges to somebody else.
Yeah. You want somebody else to do your dirty work. Your dirty work. The world's dirty work.
The world's dirty work. Exactly. I'm not benefiting.
Or the world's good work. It just seems wrong for somebody to benefit off of somebody else's crisis. It does. That's what feels so wrong.
It does. And I do feel, it's funny, actually, though, I didn't even know about Aquinas and Just Price until I actually came to Wheaton College. But even not right away. It actually took me a little while to even learn about this stuff. And it's interesting how it's actually shaped my own transactions. For example, like, I increasingly feel less good about charging a non-friend price to a stranger. I increasingly, even to a stranger, I'm like, I could probably sell this used thing for $80, but I'll sell something for 40. And I think a big part of it is like, I don't know, I just feel better about myself, I suppose. But I do. I didn't used to do that like even 8 years ago. 8 years ago, I could sell for 80, so of course I will. And the more I read about Aquinas about Just Price, the more I also get confused by friends who, for example, like, laud their children about, oh man, my child is so shrewd. You know, they bought this used furniture and they sold it for 3 times the price on some other platform. Like, oh, they're so great. I'm like, that's so interesting. It's like being praised, right? Like the actual idea of like making a pretty profit margin is considered a borderline virtue.
Well, almost nobody would have bat an eyelash if you bought your house for $100,000 and 3 years later you sold it for $300,000.
They wouldn't. Yeah, actually, that's a good example because let's see how far I'm willing to actually go on that one. I probably, when it comes to that type of price difference, I don't think I would sell a stranger how much I pay for my house 20 years later.
Well, it's public information. So they'd know and they'd still buy it.
They still buy
for the market rate.
That's right. Of course they would.
Yeah.
And as you said too, it is, when you think about economists as well, you do these interesting questions about like random transfers, right? These like transfers, I guess I'm just going to transfer. So say, for example, you could net a $200,000 profit margin on your house and you just happened, the person who hit you up first effectively gave him a $200,000 cash transfer if you sold to him for the so-called just price.
I think I know what it is. I think we care. I think more than all the prices in material prosperity and making a buck is we care about the formation of our souls, of who we are in our inside self, right?
Well, I sure hope you care about that.
Yeah. And so
that's way more important than making a buck or $100,000.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that you know the reason why you take some action. And if the reason you take some action is to take advantage of someone so that you can make a couple extra bucks, even if it's like legitimate and all above water, that's going to form you in a bad way. But if you happen to buy a house and 3 years later it's selling for a couple $100,000 more, it wasn't your intent to like take advantage of somebody. And so I don't think it like malforms you in the same way as some of these other examples might. I think that's where I answer it too.
So it's where the heart is focused.
I think so. I think if the intent is to take advantage of people so that you can make a quick buck, that's a problem. But I think the grocer probably views themselves as moving goods from all these different places to provide, to like allow families to have more time with one another because they don't have to go to 500 different places to buy all their goods, and they're willing to take some profit from that. And, or maybe they don't even think about it, but
there's a good chance they probably don't. And honestly, my day to day, I don't a whole lot either.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the only times I actually think about it when it's like really in your face.
Yeah. When it's like exorbitant.
That's right. And those are the case situations where I think where one constrains himself, asks himself, am I willing to forego this $100 profit to form my soul in a way I want to be formed? I hope the answer is yes.
It's so funny though, like a stock you would never think that. Okay, we should finish.
We keep going. This has been good though.
It's been fun.
I'm glad.
I had a couple more things on my list, but we'll never get to them.
Well, never. Wow. Do you want to do any rapid fire?
I don't know. I was wondering about the bowl of porridge. Your birthright for a bowl of porridge, Jacob and Esau.
Oh wow. Okay. Yes.
The person who gets like criticized is Esau.
Yes, for being a fool.
For being a fool.
For being a fool. For being so hungry in his moment and just sawing his future.
But in all of our examples, Jacob would be the one to hold the task. He's taking advantage of somebody who's like desperately hungry.
Honestly, that's what I've told my kids that. Don't be a Jacob.
Jacob seems like the bad guy.
I mean, Esau seems foolish and Jacob seems like he's taking advantage of that situation.
Yeah, he does.
And I don't think just because someone's a fool doesn't mean you have the freedom to take advantage of their foolishness.
And I guess they both pay a price of like enmity still bearing out.
And I think this is where an example in which the world is not binary, black and white. You don't have to have a villain and a good guy in that situation. It can both be like, oh, you both, you too.
Yeah.
Why are you so foolish and selling your birthright? And actually it is squandering it too. And simultaneously, Jacob, why are you taking advantage of this situation? Yeah. That's good. That's a great example though, because you're right. Because like typically it's like, oh, look at Esau. Like Esau not only is being foolish, but also doesn't hold in very high regard his birthright.
I think to expand my main takeaway from this conversation is to expand my field of view. So I think a core idea is what is value? What is the value of the flashlight? Mm-hmm. And I think when we're talking about prices, like we pay prices in so many dimensions. Like we pay it with our time, with our money, which is the most obvious one, but we pay it with our time. And I think there's prices you pay with your soul, you know, there's prices you pay with your formation. And like when you choose to make a little extra, sometimes you don't bear an additional cost with like who you are, who you're becoming. And other times you pay an exorbitant cost. And like think the unjust price when it is unjust comes at a great cost.
Yeah.
And that cost outweighs any sort of material benefit you could have.
That's great.
So you can still be self-interested.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Don't destroy your soul.
Don't, on that note, there's a good word for choosing better.
Take care of yourself.
Don't destroy your soul.
Take care of yourself.
That's right. Don't be malformed.
And isn't there some podcast students and someone else too? And so,
well, thanks, Enoch.
Thank you. It's been fun.
All right. Next time.
Till next time.